inform us a little more now about another subject that we find critical to the functioning of cities, and this is water and sanitation. His name is Peter Bourne. He's a visiting fellow at the Green Templeton College, University of Oxford, once again, Vice Chancellor Emeritus at St. George University in Grenada, and chair of the Medical Education Cooperation with Cuba. He was really assisted, was held a variety of positions in many organizations, and I learned yesterday that he was associated with the United Nations in an attempt to create Year of the Health, or Healthy Year, or
Water Decade, International Water Decade.
Yes, with the United Nations. So without further ado, please.
Thank you. I'm not going to... I'm somewhat shamed by the artistic excellence of the PowerPoint presentations of my predecessors, so I'm not competing with them, and I'm sticking strictly to the notion of creating the framework discussion on this topic. Clearly, a lot of the things we're talking about here have to do with livability, a nice existence, and so forth. But as far as water is concerned, there is probably nothing that is more essential to one's existence than the availability of water. It's not by chance that historically virtually every major city in the world has been built on a river or a lake or on any coastal area. And water historically has been both a source of life and a source of disease. We talked at dinner last night at some length about the Broad Street pump in London in 1830 and how on the basis of the fact that looking carefully at who was dying and what their distribution was, John Snow was able to determine that somehow, whatever the mechanism, people were dying from drinking water from this pump. So he took the pump handle away and the deaths stopped. It is also, and often overlooked, the extraordinary impact that fluoridation of water has had on people's health around the world. It has transformed oral health. It's led to the closing of many dental schools because filling cavities was the bread and butter of most dentists, and there just is not the same demand for dentists today that there was prior to the 1950s. Nevertheless, it's still true that half of all the hospital beds in the world are occupied by people with waterborne diseases. And the primary goal of most mayors around the world today is ensuring, as far as water is concerned, ensuring adequate supplies of clean, potable water is their primary concern. The problem we face is that almost everywhere water is being consumed or wasted more rapidly than it's being replenished. The flow of rivers are diminishing, aquifers are being drained, lakeshores are receding all over the world. Many global figures have drawn attention to this issue. I just quote Ban Ki-moon, who in the last month has said the scarcity of water will affect hundreds of millions of people. And it is very much a global crisis that we tend to ignore, particularly those of us who have clean, affordable, accessible water in our homes. And in fact, whole countries are in fact drying up. And we're talking about cities here, but Jordan is a country that is facing a crisis because of the lack of water supply for the entire country. And that has to be dealt with, otherwise Jordan will become virtually an unlivable zone. Cities such as London, Los Angeles, Mexico City, and Atlanta are in a constant search to maintain a steady supply of water. I could have added another 20 cities or more. These are just ones that happen to have been in the news recently for various reasons. There's been very heavy rain in Atlanta, but a year ago, they just virtually were running out of water. The supplies they counted on had just dried up because of extended drought. So merely maintaining a sufficient flow for their citizens will be one of the top priorities for many big city mayors in the next 50 years. As previous speakers have said, since 1945, there's been a growing migration from the rural areas to ever-expanding cities. 2008, 50% of the world's population live in cities. By 2025, 70% of the world's population will be in cities, and that will be 4.9 billion people. Cities with 1 to 5 million people now number 382. By 2025, that will increase to 524 cities with 1 to 5 million. And megacities with 10 million or more, which now stands at 19, will increase to 27. In the United States in 1955, half of the population had private water sources, wells, or they were getting water from rivers. They were not at all dependent on government to provide water. Today, 60 or so years later, 84% in the U.S. are now dependent on public water supplies. And at the same time, the population in general has grown, so it's not just 84%. The 84% is very much bigger than it was in 1955. The other major problem being faced by cities around the world, particularly in the developing world, is what is euphemistically referred to as peri-urban growth, but what they mean is slums. And in cities like Nairobi and Mexico City, Lagos, Lima, Rio, a number of other cities, the magnitude of that problem is just enormous. The slum of Kibera on the outskirts of Nairobi has a population of 700,000 people. And this is just one of three major slum areas around Nairobi. Those people have either no piped water at all, or they're dependent upon tanker trucks that are generally privately operated, and people come in and sell water by the bucket from the tanker trucks. Maybe it's an opportunity for private business, I'm not sure. But the difficulty that you also have is that governments don't want to provide water to these slums, because if they do, it just attracts more people from the countryside to come into the cities, and they're trying to reduce the slum population, not encourage more people to come. So it's a real dilemma, and I don't know anywhere in the world where this issue is being effectively dealt with. If you look on the web at city plans for dealing with water and water supplies, the issue that's given the greatest prominence is climate change. I believe there are some other issues, but this seems to be in the city planning community the thing that they are addressing most. And obviously it's something they don't have much control over. The question is, how are you going to respond to it? London planners project that by 2040 there will be a drop of 33% of rainfall in the UK serving the water needs of London. Increased temperatures means there will be increased evaporation of water from land and open water areas. The weather is predicted to become extremely more violent, heavy rainfall. In many instances, rainfall on cities at times will be so heavy that it will overwhelm the drainage systems, and you will then have flooding and mixture of sewer outflows and storm drains, creating a serious health hazard. In addition, higher levels of heat means higher water usage by people, and higher heat increases the potential for waterborne diseases. The other difficulties that you have is that most older cities, their water supply systems were built in the Victorian era. In some places they have been placed, been replaced or partially replaced, but in many cities the water piping system is over 100 years old and is degrading and not being properly maintained. Water loss due to leakage is as high as 40% in some cities. I think it is actually higher in a lot of places. 40% is what cities is the highest are willing to admit to. But, you know, I think it's much worse, as I say, in some places. We also have a problem where sewer lines and water lines were built in close proximity, and you have cracked sewer lines and cracked water lines. And in a number of cities, even though the water being fed into the system may be completely bacteriologically and viral free, you have a cross seepage, so that the water that ends up with the end user is seriously contaminated. So you have a big risk of disease being spread. You also have increasing chemical contamination of water, putting people at a serious risk. You have the runoff of herbicides and other agricultural byproducts, but various other chemical contamination is getting into the aquifers and essentially poisoning the water supply and requiring much more elaborate and expensive purification processes. We were asked to look at collaboration with business. One of the things that I think perhaps more than any other area we've talked about is that there is a fierce urgency about this problem that we're not really facing up to in many places. That this is a problem that is getting steadily worse and our interventions are really not impacting it terribly effectively. The opportunities for business are to rebuild the piping system, to improve leak detection and replacement of leaking pipes, to build water storage facilities, especially large numbers of new reservoirs. We have reservoirs, but with global warming, the cyclical aspects of heat and cold means that the reservoirs are not enough and in many places are in risk of just drying up. So more reservoirs are needed to save water when there is heavy rain downfall. There needs to be greater sewage processing facilities and improved waste disposal. And we need to improve and better plan aquifer usage as well as aqueduct construction. There is also the whole issue of recycling water, which I have not put as a bullet on here, but improved filtration and purifying is extremely important. Ironically, there is a potential to use human waste for agricultural purposes. And this is one area where, in a way, we've gone backwards in 100 years, because 100 years ago, there were people collecting night soil from outside privies, and they made a good business selling it for agricultural purposes. We stopped doing that because we felt that that was attractive. Now we have the opportunity to do what we were doing 100 years ago and do it much more effectively, to compost human waste and make it a serious and important agricultural input. We also have the opportunity to use recycled water, brown water, for urban gardens, for a variety of other agricultural activities, to water parks where we don't want to use fresh water. So there is a real opportunity, and again, an opportunity for business. Finally, there's the issue of just reducing water usage. Education about water conservation, one might not think it would have a very big impact, but water education in the UK is credited with reducing water consumption by 10%, which is, to me, quite impressive. Hosepipe bans, although people complain about them, really have a significant impact, particularly in parts of the U.S. It has dramatically reduced water use. Metering water supplies, if people's water usage is measured and they are charged by the quantity of water they use, this is controversial, but it also has a powerful effect in making people look more carefully at how much water they are using. And the whole issue of privatization of water and sewage services is in many ways a bigger issue in the developing world than it is in the industrial world, but it's another area that is contentious, that is an option on the table and needs to be addressed perhaps differently in different locations. But I suppose the bottom line of what I wanted to say is that water is critically important and we desperately need better policies to deal with it. Thank you.
We need to move, switch the presentation.